This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Another episode of You Don't Know Billy Jack, a podcast series where we discussed some of the greatest
in disgust
of some of the greatest pro wrestling matches of all time, and we discuss those through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan. Jordan, our resident non-wrestling fan, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Doing okay. I've had some things to talk to you about, and I keep forgetting what they are. First of all, we're here once again at the body dump.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold in here. It's raining outside. There's a barbecue going down a couple doors down. We're not invited to it.
They'd probably give us a plate if we asked.
Yeah, probably.
It's the chop shop.
Yeah. Anyways, we've both got coughs.
Mm-hmm.
You're still sick.
This cough is kind of all that really remains.
Yeah.
I'm a little congested, but this thing's like not leaving me alone.
Yeah. Me neither. Hazel either.
Mm.
We both had it right before Christmas, and it's still going. And I think now we've cycled around her and I to where we have another cold.
You've re-upped.
On top of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Is the boy going to daycare soon?
He is going to the preschool or...
Yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Penfield one? Or
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Get ready.
Give him the address of where it is, too.
I'll be sure to include that in the show description.
While you bring him up, we were giving him a bath today and tonight, and we put in these like color things. Like it's like this capsule that you can put in the water and it makes it you know red or yellow or whatever.
Cool.
And it's like, yeah, it's really kind of fun, but he wanted to keep doing them, so then it just turned into this, like...
Like brown?
Well, it's like a greenish-gray, and then I started to, like, think of that sick gummo.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking.
And I was like, dude...
The seeded gummo.
I gotta get him out of this bath soon, because it's making, like, it was making me physically ill.
That's the most disgusting, of all the things in that movie... Yeah, dude. That's the grossest thing, huh?
Yeah, like, I'll watch that movie again, but I don't think I can do that scene again. That is the sickest... It is the sickest scene.
Yeah. So there's the cough. So anyone who's not familiar with the movie Gummo, there's a scene where there's a little boy sitting in a bathtub of dirty water eating a plate of spaghetti. And it's like disgusting looking spaghetti and a glass of milk. And then his mom brings him a candy bar too. And he's like eating a candy bar and he drops the candy bar in the water.
Dude, and he's just chowing. He's chowing. Down.
But it's like like inherently the only disgusting or the only thing that's off about the description is the water is dirty.
Right.
But like the reality is much, much worse.
Dude.
But it's like, it's just, just the way the spaghetti, like, goes into his mouth and everything.
He's just slurping that spaghetti up, and then I think I read, or you told me or something, that Werner Herzog was like, I knew that what's the director?
Harmony Korine.
He's like, I knew that he was a genius when I saw that scene and there was bacon scotch taped to the wall. Like, in the scene. That is the most twisted, disgusting. It's really disgusting and disturbing.
That wasn't me. That wasn't me. That's so funny.
I must have just been so perturbed that I read about. I went and read about it, and
oh my gosh!
Yeah, and it's like that's when he knew like that film was genius or something. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
I guess.
Have you heard any other like exploits about Werner Herzog, stuff he said and all that? So no. Like, have you heard of the movie Bad Lieutenant before?
Is that the one? Is it Nicolas Cage?
Okay, so he's in a movie called Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a Werner Herzog movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a movie with Harvey Keitel called Bad Lieutenant.
Okay.
Before that, late 80s, I think.
Was this also Herzog?
No.
Okay.
It's directed by someone else. I forget who it was. I want to say like maybe like Jess Franco or someone. You know, freaky like that. But anyways, that, you know, that movie obviously existed first, and it's about like this corrupt Harvey Keitel's this corrupt cop, and it's like it's sketchy. Really grimy.
Okay, yeah, I'm picturing it.
Yeah, but so then there's the Nicolas Cage movie, which is the same movie. It's the same premise.
Huh.
And Werner Herzog claims he's never heard of the he's never heard of the first
one. That's cool.
And there's someone else like. I'm this might not be correct, because I don't think it's this person, but
I love it.
It's the same scenario where like someone asked like, oh, like Jess Franco, who's a man of course, directed this movie, like, you never heard of that? And his response is, I've never heard of her,
dude.
It's that he says that about a director.
That's so
a male
cool.
director. Yeah. Awesome.
That's a, like a big power move.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest.
Yeah. Like, there's this one employee at work. She's really funny. She, you know how we all get punished there all day. I mean, these people come in and they have these attitudes. And,
yes.
Or they'll just like try to be your buddy,
yeah.
you know, and
which
like,
is worse.
And chop it up, which
yeah,
is like,
yeah, yeah.
And so she was putting out some clothing and, One of the things she had was this elf, like a shirt with Elvis, and he's like, "Whoa, the king!"
Yeah,
and the lady was like, "Huh?" She's like, and he's like, "He's this dad, you know, dad rocker."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Elvis Presley, man, Elvis the king." And she's like, "Huh, I never heard of him. Who is he?" And the guy was like, he was just freaking out.
Awesome.
And she just kept, sorry, man, never heard of him.
That's good.
Come on, like, Heartbreak Hotel. And, like, he's trying to explain, like, this cultural icon.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
everyone
yeah.
knows who that is. But
yeah.
She's just like, sorry, dude, like, I've never heard of him.
Awesome.
Like, it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's really good.
And, like, it made him really upset. And, like, that was cool.
Very good. Okay, so anyways, so... The little boy is going to be going to daycare or preschool.
Yeah.
How many days a week now?
Two.
Just 2 days a week. That's yeah. good. Tuesday, Thursday?
Yeah.
Very good. Very exciting. They're sick all the time now.
Oh.
You know that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
He's sick all the time anyways, though.
Solomon?
Right?
No.
Isn't he around? He's around Rachel's kids so much that he gets sick all the time?
No, he's like very rarely sick.
Are you sure?
I think so.
I don't think. I think we're talking about different children, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
You're thinking of John.
Who? Well, anyways, that's very exciting, and I'm sure all the listeners of You Don't Know Billy Jack.
Yeah, that, you guys are all probably really excited for that, you know.
Which means Doug and Justin.
Right.
Are really going to want to hear about...
Billy Jack Jr.
Billy Jack Jr., that's your son. That's his name. So, a couple other business things to take care of. St. Vitus. The V...
Mm.
record.
Mm.
You listened to it.
I did.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I think it was probably better than the other one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I liked it more, but it sounds better. The production, I think,
yes.
is better.
Yeah.
And I feel like the riffs might be a little better.
Yeah, probably.
They just feel a little more catchy.
Yeah, I think so. It's more driving, right?
Yeah, but I kind of like the content of the other one a little bit more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets a little silly with, like... You know I don't like all the silliness of that kind of music.
Are you thinking about the song When Emotion Dies with the female vocals?
Well, I was thinking about, like... There's a song, it's like Jack Frost.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Is that...
That's a riff.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But, I don't know, all the lyrics and the...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
You like the depression and alcoholism and
that. Yeah, I mean, right? That, yeah. He kind of like... It's kind of... the other one's kind of more exposing. I mean, there's some stuff in this one, too, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, like, pound for pound, this might be, the like, a better... Because yeah. You had said this is... Is that one more, like, popular?
Born Too Late is.
Oh, okay.
Born Too Late is the one.
Hmm.
That's the one. And that's one that, like...
That kind of makes me wonder, like, curious a little bit.
Yeah. That's the whole thing, is that that's the one that I've never really connected to.
Yeah, the riffs don't really have what they have, I don't think, on Born Too Late.
But. No, it's, I think, like, all of them are better in every way than Born Too Late.
Yeah.
But Born Too Late, the lyrics... have a lot to do with it, I think.
Yeah, the lyrics are really cool.
Yeah.
On that album.
And that was like their biggest one at the time. And that was like Wino leaving the Obsessed and joining St. Vitus. And that was a big deal, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. But Born Too Late's finally, like, it's finally hitting me.
Yeah. I mean,
like, just for what it is, you know. Like, the riffs aren't as good.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But it's like the combination of like, it's like you said, it's super primitive.
It's extremely primitive.
It's really sparse.
At least from these two records, I'm like, man, this band is so primitive.
Yeah. It's really sparse, you know? it's like super minimal.
Yeah.
With Wino, like talking about. Like, how he wants to die.
Yeah.
And I, like, Born Too Late, that's, like, an anthem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, no, I think they're cool. I think if I'm gonna listen to that kind of music, I'd probably go there.
Yeah.
And I think that his voice is tolerable.
Yeah.
For what I'm,
it's not the it's not what you hate.
It's not what I hate. Metal. Yeah.
Well, okay. Maybe I'll. I don't know. You wouldn't like the first singer. Because it's like a bad version of the heavy metal thing. I think it's awesome, of course, but
sure.
I don't think you would like it at all. I may let you borrow. the one that's probably my favorite, called Mournful Cries.
Okay.
It is awesome.
Is this after what we've listened to?
Yes. Well, no, it's in between.
Mm.
It's in between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it has a couple songs that Wino wrote on it.
Yeah.
So he plays guitar a little bit.
So what's with these bands that, like, go to another country to record? Because I'm picturing... Because... I guess, first of all, how big were they at the time of the recording of that album?
V?
Yeah.
Not very big.
Like, not big enough to fly somewhere expressly to record, I imagine.
No, well, so that was originally released by this label called Hellhound. which was, like, in the 1990s, Hellhound was the label. Like, that was the doom metal label. That is how that genre survived, essentially. Like, Earache did a little bit, and, like, Lee Dorian and stuff. Like, there was a little bit going on, but, Rise Above Records, too. That's Lee Dorian's label. They were doing some stuff, but essentially, you know, Hellhound was, like, that's the label. And they're based in Germany.
So they didn't start on SST.
They did.
Oh, okay.
They did start on SST. Okay. Then they went to Hellhound, which is a bigger label. But like a startup, too, at the time. But they were in Germany, and they probably...
Germans.
Yeah. Mm. Well, they were probably able to pay, because with the euro difference and everything, they were probably able to...
Euro.
Yeah.
No euro back then, though.
No? Deutschmark. Oh, the Deutschmark. Right.
There's toilet paper, probably, at the time. The Deutschmark.
Surely.
So
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know what the exchange rate was at that point.
Without knowing the history, I just pictured them constructing a tour around going to record there.
Yeah, that could have that's possible.
And
yeah.
Like that's like what Annihilation Time did.
Yeah, you know they did it because of St. Vitus, supposedly.
Oh, see that. That's what I don't know.
Yeah,
that's why I'm asking, why would you do that? Because it's already stressful to record.
Yeah.
And it's inconvenient. It's all these things.
Yeah,
so, like, you know, are they from Los Angeles?
Yeah.
You know, that's like a recording capital of the world.
Yeah. So Hellhound probably paid for the recording, and probably they wanted to be, like, involved, like, helping produce it and kind of overseeing it.
And so they're like, if you can get out here and we do a tour or whatever, and then you can just record here.
Yeah. But I think Annihilation Time...
They recorded in, like, Amsterdam or Holland? Or...
Yeah, which was where St. Vitus recorded their last record, or the last before the reunion stuff. So in 1995, the record's called Die Healing, and it was recorded there.
Hmm.
And it's the best sounding one. And a lot of people think that's the best record, the best St. Vitus record.
Hmm.
It might be. That's a good one. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure Annihilation Time did that because of that St. Vitus record.
That's funny.
Yeah.
The more you know.
There you go. Okay, something else music related real quick, and then we'll get into it here. But, you already think I'm stupid, but you're going just think even less of me, if that's at all possible.
Don't you dare.
So I've been re-uploading.
Don't you dare.
Chocolate coin?
Have a coin.
Thank you. Chocolate quarter. Oh, what's the state? North Carolina, first in flight.
I don't know what the exchange rate, I don't know what the, like, turn-in cash value is of those.
We'll find out. Oh, South Carolina, too. Oh.
It's not representative.
Huh. Anyway, thank you very much.
Mm.
This isn't Russell Stover's chocolate or anything. This is, like, a legitimate chocolatier.
Yes.
So I've been re-uploading all of my music in lossless format.
Uh-huh.
How deep do you go with any of that?
No, dude, no.
Listen.
You can, like, hear it.
No, you seriously can. I'm not even joking. So this is this, and here. So here's the thing, is I got, you know, I was looking at, like, I don't know, Loudness Wars stuff and all that. So anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is, Loudness Wars, in really simplified, quick terms, it's. Producers and engineers and bands producing music that is less dynamic than and thus louder. Yeah. Just compressing music so it's louder.
So you can pop it into your player dynamic of choice and it will be louder at a lower volume.
Yeah.
So it's made sure to be heard.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, debates and all that about it. So anyways, but I was like listening to some of that or looking around something related to that, and then stumbled on this site. I wish I could find it again because it's really interesting. That compared all the different uploading formats, so MP3, like AAC,
mm-hmm.
FLAC, WAVE, whatever. And it took what the guy did was like explain. You know, there's a bunch of graphs that didn't make sense.
Sure,
but he took the negative audio. So the lost audio.
Yeah.
And played clips of that for each one.
I feel like I have seen this site.
There's like, so there was one that I found that was like a project, like a an art project or a music project of someone that used only discarded information to make a song or something. But this was a different one, and it was more in depth. And it was like pretty crazy how much you could hear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, it's one of those things that if you don't know what you're listening, if you don't know that you're losing anything, you can't hear it, obviously.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, Lord knows I can't hear a darn thing.
That's the paradox here.
That's the paradox. But here's the reasoning for it. First of all, there are instances where, like, well, and it might even be especially beneficial for me because I have such bad hearing anyways. So, like, I can hear, there's been times when I've been able to hear, like, full-on keyboard parts that I couldn't before or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it also raises a philosophical question about, like, you're not listening to the music as it was intended to be heard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, whether or not I can even hear the difference, which, like, honestly, I can't for the most part. Unless I'm, like, comparing the two back to back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Then I can hear, like, barely something, maybe. But for the most...
depending on what it is.
Yeah. But it's like a philosophical thing of I'm not hearing the music the way it was intended to be heard by the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but a computer program is deciding what's important to be heard rather than, like, the musician themselves.
Yeah, I think the counter to that would be, well, I mean, that's right, but, like, another perspective would be kind of what you've brought up that I think about a lot about artists is, you know, one time you said, look, like, we were talking about an artist, and you said, like, I'm only gonna care as much as they do.
Yeah.
And, like, I really think the field of artists, of, like, when it comes to, like, an intent and vision, is really narrow. Like, we're talking, like, King Crimson and, you know, maybe the Beach Boys or whatever, where there's, like, a clear intent in the studio to make sure it sounds this way.
Yeah.
And then everyone else, for the most part, I'm talking about for the most part, I'm not talking about, they want it to sound cool.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so what does that mean? Like, they want it to be really powerful, or they want it to be, now it might not sound the same as when they did it, but it's also like when you listen to something that's been remastered.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, maybe they didn't even have any part of that, but it might sound more realized or...
Right, yeah, yeah.
Or like, people ruining their own legacy. Not ruining, but like the artist making decisions like that later in their career that their younger artist self wouldn't agree with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, Iggy Pop remixing Raw Power, and he's like, I'm going to keep everything in the red. And it's like, just like, it sounds like crap,
it's terrible,
like, and it's like, nobody, none of them, like, back then would have thought that sounded cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, there's kind of shades of gray there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. But even then it's like, he made it, like, that's his right to do whatever he wants with it at
sure.
this point, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, what you're choosing what version of him to listen to.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like, and I mean, I guess you could always stay the most current.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think there's kind of a level of, like, how much do they care, you know?
Right, yeah.
And, like, I think that's where the level of how much, like, philosophically you're kind of moving away from what they intended.
Yeah.
Like the typical band, you know, just wants it to sound good.
Right.
And that can mean a lot of things.
Sure, yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah.
And there's been plenty of bands that, like, would have done things differently if they had the technology afforded to them.
I mean, every band.
So it's like, that's also kind of hard, too.
Yeah.
Because some guys, I mean, you've seen it, like these weird artists, these, when they grow up and they do their dads and they're in the 80s and like they re-record their own material and it's with that 80s production and they think it sounds awesome and right. It's like really crappy and
yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted your, I didn't know where you like where you fell on that. On
yeah,
that
whole thing. I, you know, honestly haven't thought too hard about it. Because I'm mostly, like, 90% of my music listening experience is on a record at home or in a, on a CD in my car.
Yeah.
So, like, I have an iPod that I also use in my car sometimes. But, yeah. Like, the two, my two primary experiences are, like, just dealing with the format.
Right.
That like, I have.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't, now the CD is the CD and that. That can mean different things depending on the version of whatever you're listening to.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But like, for the most part, it's what was released, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I don't have to think about it as much as when I like listened more exclusively, like digitally.
Yeah.
But I'm not really set up for that, you know.
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, do you think like when Creedence remixed all that stuff, like? You know, you're like, dude, you can hear the bass now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine they were like, this stuff needs to get remixed. Do you think?
That, so.
I mean, I picture not. More like someone at Fantasy or whatever being like knowing music and being like,
yeah,
we gotta make this, we gotta do an upgrade here.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure. I wonder. I don't know. I don't have like. I'm not like asking rhetorically necessarily. I don't know.
I would say most likely, yeah. Like most likely it was a label thing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's better.
It sounds better. Like it sounds closer to the vinyl.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like so my whole thing, you know, I don't like vinyl records.
Of course.
My whole thing is like. I have to find a balance between, like, price and convenience and sound quality.
Totally, yeah.
So it's like, I want to hear the material as close to the original presentation as possible.
Right.
While making it, like, while having it available in a variety, being able to... have it in a variety of formats, yeah, digitally and whatever, and,
right.
And have it be convenient and cost effective.
Yeah.
So like,
and then that gets tricky.
Yeah. So like the original, you know, Creedence CDs are real thin sounding and you can't hear the bass hardly, you know,
right.
At all. The 40th, it was like the 40th anniversary editions or something. Those sound really good. Like
totally.
they're not super compressed. They are compressed, but
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
They sound
tasteful,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bass is louder. So that's closer to, because obviously like vinyl there's inherently more you know, bass presence mm-hmm. there. You know what I mean? So that sounds closer to what the vinyl record sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm able to have that in my car and on my iPod at work or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, huh.
So that's that.
Do you guys care about this stuff out there? Let
Hello?
Us know. Yeah.
Is anyone listening?
Oh.
No. The answer is no. No one is listening.
Mm.
And no one cares.
Oh, God bless them.
No one likes you. No one cares.
Yeah, I knew that.
What was that? What band was that?
Outbreak.
Huh.
That was their only good,
yeah,
like
thing.
That was like, sorry, I shouldn't say that. That was like,
it was.
That was like the. It was very impactful, and it was like, okay, this is what a hardcore band.
Yeah,
that's like what they're supposed to be saying and singing.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a good. That was a good song.
That was a good song. Good live band. Those
yeah.
couple times that they
yeah,
played
really
in town.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, they covered Riot Brigade.
Dude.
The song, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Dude, it's so sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone who covers the song Riot Brigade is, like, awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yep. All right. So, as always, Jordan, I haven't even introduced our match yet, but just to let everyone know, including Jordan, we will be doing a live watch of the match, discussing anything that comes up along the way, and afterwards I will ask you, Jordan, a series of questions that are standardized, and you know the story, of course. And just in case we have any new listeners, of course, the concept of this show, Jordan and I are good friends. I'm a wrestling fan. Jordan is not. We're watching matches that are generally considered to be, you know, some of the greatest of all time. And what we're looking for is just to see if there's any kind of, you know, universal connection that can be found in the storytelling of those matches. Now, the match that we're watching for this episode is, many people know this. This is another one that many people know strictly by the date, 6/9/95. If you say that date, people know what that means. So this is from All Japan Pro Wrestling, Kenta Kobashi and Mitsuharu Misawa. We saw him last time, do you remember, in the green, versus Toshiaki Kawada and Akira Taue.
Okay.
So this is another one. Usually I explain afterwards the reputation of the match and everything, some of the context, but this is another standard answer. Anything beyond, you know, WWE, what's the greatest match of all time? 6/3/94, 6/9/95. Those are, you know, standard answers.
Okay.
So, are we ready?
Let's do it. Dive in.
Dive in. All right. So, for anyone watching along at home, we are, again, I can't necessarily give you this isn't on the network or anything. I can't give you the source, but this is, the match opens, the file opens with a picture of the mat, the ring, with the Japanese title of the match over it. And we're going to start in 3, 2, 1, play. All right. So I am going to give you, remember last time we kind of watched, yeah, you watched pretty blind going into that match. I need to give you a little bit more information here. I'm just going to. It's my show. So this here, this is the team. That's Akira Taue in the red. Toshiaki Kawada. You remember him. Yeah. Dangerous K and Dynamic T.
Yeah, so cool.
The Holy Demon Army.
Okay. The Holy Demon Army.
Yes. So this is them. And you hear Spartan X starting up. That you've recognized that song, of course, at this point. And everyone chanting.
Favorite song.
Sure. So everyone's chanting for Misawa back in Budokan Hall.
Is this the same promotion as the last one?
Yes, all Japan Pro Wrestling. Yeah. So this is a tag team match for the tag team titles, rather than the singles title. So, you know that
I recognize him.
That's Misawa.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the orange, that's Kenta Kobashi. That's Mitsuharu Misawa, of course. So these two teams they've feuded for years at this point.
Okay.
They've had a lot of different matches together. You know, Misawa, of course, and Kawada, they've feuded for a very, very long time.
Right.
And again, they've had several matches. Even when they were tag team partners, they would have matches against each other.
So they've been partners together?
Yeah, in the early 90s through early 93. So Kawada has never pinned Misawa. I told you that last time, you know, that he's kind of the underdog. Misawa, he's the top guy and the champion of the promotion.
Yeah. Is it raining out there?
It's not right now, no. And so Akira Taue, mm-hmm. You see, he's kind of funny looking. His body, he's like a miniature version of Giant Baba.
So,
and I love him. Love him.
Holy Demon Army.
Mm-hmm. And there's Kenta Kobashi. And there you go. So that's your top guy. And I will say, this is another one, you know, again, to the listeners, this is another one where we may talk a little less, just because, again, I don't know, this is like one of those kind of epic ones that mm-hmm. may require a little bit more investment. Could you actually turn it up just a hair? That's good, thank you.
Giant Baba.
He's like a baby Giant Baba. First impressions, just like, I don't know if you remember, because it has been a little bit since we recorded that last match, but do you remember how that felt at first? There was a real sense of gravity, even to the entrances.
Yeah.
Did you get that here? Or not as much?
Not as much, but no, it's there.
Yeah.
And the audience feels it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
How many, like, people do you think are there?
It's like 16 or 17,000.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a big crowd.
That is a big crowd, yeah.
Yeah.
What's, like, the most... What's the biggest crowd there's ever been in professional wrestling?
That's Giant Baba talking. So it 100,000 people in North Korea.
Dude.
Yeah, in 1995, Antonio Inoki, who we saw in that New Japan Gauntlet match, he held a big professional wrestling show like 2 days.
Whoa.
It was like over 100,000 both days.
Crazy.
Yeah. With a bunch of wrestlers on it and stuff. It's not a very good... It's not very good.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But, you know, second would be one of the WrestleManias.
That's kind of like what I would have guessed.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, 93,000 is what they claimed that were at the Savage versus Steamboat match that we watched. That's like, there's like a big dispute, you know, but, you know, and they claimed a couple years ago, they claimed they were at Jerry World in Dallas.
Dude.
That there's like 101,000.
I mean, I'd believe it if you told me that.
Right, yeah. I mean, there wasn't, but, yeah, you know, yeah. It's a lot of darn people, yeah. No matter what. So you've seen here a very tentative start.
Yeah, and they seem to be like, it seems like a grudge match.
Yeah.
Like they're really glaring at each other and selling like some kind of grudge or anger.
Yeah. And so Kawada got in now for the first time. You saw how big the reaction was for
yeah.
him. And you heard the crowd chanting for Kobashi.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you see Kobashi, he's like big and good looking and like jacked up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's got the like chiseled face and
yeah.
Yeah. He's striking Dangerous K, but he's just kind of taking it. Like,
yeah.
Like he's like furious.
Yeah. And so they're exchanging now. Kawada's chopping Kobashi.
Oh
no!
Oh,
there you go. So Kawada,
little dirty move there.
Yeah, Kawada just kicked masala off the apron. There you go.
This seems a lot more invested
than the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's kind of like, all the players involved seem to really be like going with their emotions
a little more.
That's what it feels like to me. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've had, it's been a year since that last match, and that last match was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only been building since then.
So now now he's coming in and everyone's starting to ramp up.
Yeah.
Giant Baba.
Yesterday was the anniversary of his death.
Oh.
The 20th anniversary, in fact, I think. No. He died in 99. Oh, it's 2019. So yeah, the 20th anniversary.
Don't date the show. Oh. I want them to be able to listen to this in 50 years.
Forever. Yeah.
Who were they chanting? I couldn't quite make it out.
A Misawa.
Okay.
And so you see Misawa using the elbow. Remember, that's...
Sure.
Yeah. So Kawada...
Dangerous K just did another dirty
move. Dirty kick to Kobashi. Kicked Kobashi off the apron. You can see that the camera is shaking from the crowd.
Yeah. The ref is now, like, arguing with everyone, making sure they understand the rules.
Yeah.
Is this hyper guy that's announcing, is that the guy you were saying that everyone who knows what he's saying is like, dude, that guy sucks?
Yeah.
So funny.
Very funny. So, I'll give you just another little piece. So, each guy is known for something. Kawada has his kicks. Kobashi has chops. Misawa has the elbow. Tawe has like the choke slam.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we've got Kobashi versus Tawe here. And you're seeing the way, like, they are making like each move like mean something, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna try to not, I don't know, give too much away, but I want to give you little things here and there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is needed. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Take as needed for pain.
Mm-hmm. Great, great record title.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's deep.
Yeah. And so I'll another thing. We talked about it a little bit during the last match, but these four here, the four pillars of heaven,
what
they're known as.
This,
you know,
is, this is them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, a lot of people consider three of them to be like the top three greatest wrestlers of all time.
Okay.
I want you to keep that in mind.
Okay.
And tell me at the end. I'll ask you. I'll try to remember. I'll probably forget, but I'd like to know who you like. I'd like you to order them for me.
Okay.
So that'll be a little bonus question.
Okay. Who's the little Baba? What's his name?
Tawe.
Tawe.
Yeah.
And what is he known for, you said?
Like a choke slam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Choke slammed back to life.
That's right.
Also a really good title.
Yeah.
Now he seems to have his leg wrapped. Or is that... Does that mean anything?
Kobashi?
No.
Tawe?
Yeah. He's got like... That thigh is like covered.
Is it? Is it just his pasty skin?
No, let's see it when they...
Because Kobashi has his In the orange there. Yeah, that's Kobashi.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, so is that significant?
Yeah, in that it's an injury.
Okay, it is supposed to be in it. Like, yeah. There's an injury there.
Yeah.
Okay. Kobashi. So, has Giant Baba stopped wrestling at this point?
No.
And he's an announcer, or...?
No, he still wrestles.
Okay.
I mean, mostly, like, lower card multi-man tag matches. He's not competing for any titles.
He's kind of like a novelty, or...?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a typical trajectory?
Yes. Yeah, especially in All Japan. They really keep a lot of the old guys around for a long time, and they'll just have them work. Again, these, like, lower mid-card tags.
Yeah.
And, or opening tag matches or something, and, like, they're respected, and the crowd knows them and loves them, and they'll get in, and they'll do their couple kind of signature moves, and...
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's...
And they
that's,
kind of announce here and there and do this and that.
Yeah, some of them, sure, yeah. But that's a very common trajectory. Again, especially in All Japan. They are really known for having, like, their old guys stay around. Yeah. And so you see Kawada and Kobashi are in. Kawada was kicking that injured leg.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. but yeah, like there's a guy that still wrestles in All Japan, Fuchi, Masanobu Fuchi. And I'm watching him right now in 1981 in Memphis. So, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Does Hogan still wrestle?
No. No, a lot of that, and most of that generation
is spent.
Yeah. I mean, most of them are dead.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All those WWF guys, they're like all dead.
I wonder what Hulk's net worth is right now.
Yeah, no one could have any way of knowing.
Yeah.
You see,
he's working that.
He's just working that leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. He won all that Gawker money, you know?
That's right.
But like, I don't know how much of that
is real, really. Yeah.
How much he got from all that. I mean...
And is there all these... They're probably trying to tie that up in litigation. And...
Yeah. Like, I don't know how much he would have, because he got divorced, too.
Yeah.
So, no one... I don't know how anyone would ever know.
Yeah.
Especially with a guy like that who is a complete... you know, everything is masked.
Yeah.
Like, there's... He doesn't show you anything real, right. You know? But, I mean, at the same time, he made so much money.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, he made so much money for, you know, 15 years.
Right.
Straight. And very good money on the other sides of those.
Yeah, right.
And a guy like that, I would see him as probably a very good, shrewd businessman. I mean, I know he was a shrewd businessman, because you hear all the stories of how he negotiated his contract.
Yeah, totally.
I mean...
He built himself, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, like, totally, like, notorious.
Yeah.
For how shrewd of a businessman he was.
Yeah.
Again, when in wrestling and his contracts and all that.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure he's... Wow, that's a fascinating mystery to me.
Yeah.
So they've been working, this whole Hogan talk, they've been working that leg.
Yeah, Kobashi.
They tagged in and out, and mm-hmm. they've just both been going on Kobashi's leg.
Yeah. So they've really slowed down the pace here.
Mm-hmm.
They had a few, couple flurries with some big outside moves as kind of a way to turn the tides, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone, Chad, who's involved with the Place to Be Nation website. He watches this match every Christmas as a gift to himself.
Dude, that is so cool. So, Misawa, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of saving the day right now.
Yeah. If you notice, remember that Rock and Roll Express match we watched?
Uh-huh.
That was, okay, so you see that? Yeah. Misawa got Kawada back, gave him an elbow on the apron, knocked him off.
While he was out of the ring, out of the match.
Yeah. So the real thing with like American or Southern tag team wrestling is the baby face gets beat up for a long stretch, right? You know, and builds the crowd up to make a big, it's called a hot tag.
Okay.
So the other guy comes, he finally is able to get and tag his partner.
And the guy does some justice.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the case here.
Right.
You know, it's much quicker. And so Kawada just walked in.
Just without being tagged.
Yeah, and just kicked Masao in the head.
Yeah, this is like a major grudge match.
Yeah. Yeah, so you see, like, we don't have that element here.
Yeah.
You do have, like, similar working style in the sense that, you know, you're working over a body part and Kobashi's selling it, but it's not, they don't build to that one big moment.
Right. What's the promotion that you said works to a climax? It's like a gradual, they work to a peak.
Oh, so a lot of the Japanese promotions in terms of the way they structure their shows. Yeah. So All Japan and New Japan.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do that.
So Dangerous K's really been giving it to Misawa.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much the whole match.
Yeah. Oh.
So he shoved the ref and he's still going.
And you see, you can see like Misawa's head rocking
from
you know, getting kicked.
Right.
And look at that.
Yeah.
Misawa's coming back with the elbows now.
That's his thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. Look at that. Tatawe. Whoa. Big kick.
Yeah. Now everyone's going on each other.
Oh, so, you see that?
Yeah. That guy is sketchy.
Yeah, Tawe.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Like you said, his strange body.
Yeah.
What is the end point, like when one person has been like pinned down?
yeah, so not like an elimination or anything, just one person gets pinned, that's it.
Okay. Dude, he's going all bows on this guy.
Yeah. Bow heavy, you might say.
Bow heavy, yeah.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at old Tawe. Look at that. Oh. So Tawe threw Misawa down on Kobashi's leg.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was good.
Oh, man, oh, man.
And, he's just, like, all put out.
Yeah. Tawe. Right. Oh, lordy. Kawada.
Those are your guys, huh?
Yeah. Oh, Holy Demon Army.
Holy Demon Army. I still can't get enough of that.
And so Kobashi, he's rolled out of the ring. He's on the floor just grasping his leg now. Big kick, Kawada nailing Misawa. That's our first pin attempt there.
Yeah.
So Kawada and Tallway feuded for a few years, like 3 years.
Okay.
And then just decided to tag one day.
That's really good.
Like, they had a draw. They had a match that was like a 30-minute draw and just became partners after that.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Wrestling,
yeah. But that's an underrated... Because, you know, All Japan 90s, I told you.
Yeah.
It's, like, considered, you know... The best.
Gold standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By a lot of people. And the big feud is Misawa versus Kawada.
Yeah.
For at least the first half, you know. Tawei versus Kawada is a very underrated aspect of the whole decade. I love it. Like I've seen all that stuff. It's so good.
But you love them teamed up.
Yeah.
So Dangerous K has really been having the upper hand over Misawa this whole match.
Yes.
He's, like, beat up on him pretty good pretty much this whole time.
Have you noticed whenever Misawa is able to get in any offense, like, how is he able to fight back with
his elbow?
Yeah,
he kind of, like, brought that out against both of them for that little period, and it was, like, the crowd was going crazy.
Yeah. There you go.
Dude, yes.
You know, that's like someone being down and being worked on during a match. It's like, that's one of my very, very favorite things.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. There's a real famous Giant Baba tag match where Baba, they're trying to work on his chest. His, like, really broad chest. Uh-huh. It's wonderful. Look at that. Look at that, Tawei. Look at him.
Oh,
so he picked up Misawa and just threw him.
They just held him there for half a minute.
Yeah.
Just kind of throw dropped him.
Yeah. And Kobashi was just starting to crawl up. Kawada just kicked him back down to the ground. You know, I'm trying to think when the last time I saw this match was. It's been a few years at this point, I think.
What did you say his nickname was?
Dynamic T.
Dynamic T. That's so good.
Yeah. Japanese tag team names are very good in general. Look at that. Power bomb. Remember, that's three power bombs. That's his big thing.
Right.
That was a really awesome shot where you saw the pin attempt. It was a wide shot. You saw the pin attempt in the ring, and then Tawei beating up Kobashi on the outside. There's another team in All Japan around this time. They actually made... I think they've broken up at this point, but called the Miracle Violence Connection.
Oh my god. Dude, that's cool.
It's two American guys.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The Miracle Violence Connection, I'm sure.
So Kobashi, he's back in the ring now.
Yeah.
Here he is. Oh boy.
Kinda trying to overcome.
Yeah.
So, have Dangerous K and Misawa seen each other for the past year at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and they... I think they've had singles matches, at least one since then. My timeline my timeline and dates for this stuff is so bad because these four guys just face each other constantly in like tag team matches and in singles matches, so it's like,
so it gets pretty,
yeah, it's very confusing. Yeah.
But that's what the people want.
Yeah. I mean, there's 17,000 people there, so.
It's kind of like superheroes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. So Kawada's down here. There's Kobashi. So that, remember, his chops are his.
Yeah.
His thing.
And he was kind of boldly taking him in the beginning of the match, but now he's like, he's really like,
yeah,
labored and being really being hurt by him.
Yeah. That's called selling, brother.
Selling.
Well, look at Kawada still having the same reaction. Remember how he was just kind of taking everything?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's like trying to come back.
Yeah. Oof. Kobashi.
I feel like they're being a lot more expressive, like facially expressive than I've seen.
Yes. Well, and Kobashi is much more expressive than Misawa.
Yeah, yeah. And the crowd is like really responding to that.
Yes.
They've all kind of sold like that aspect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Giant Baba. It's just ridiculous concept.
Oh, wonderful. You know what was so awesome about him was, because he was the top guy. You know, in the promotion for...
Yeah, that's what you're saying. You know,
15 years or whatever. But, you know, like, you watch matches of his in Japan in the 60s, and he's, you know, just real weird looking and huge.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't wrestle and really acknowledge that aspect. He wouldn't, like, you know, be like Andre the Giant.
And
just kind of work like, it. Yeah. He would wrestle like, you know, he'd have like these mat wrestling, you know, exchanges. Awesome. So we got Tale and Kobashi here.
Kobashi's like trying to come back a little bit.
Yeah. I would like for us to watch a giant Baba match so you can see him. I don't know if we'll get around to it as one of our little bonuses, you know. Yeah, I don't know if we'll get around to it.
Did Stan Hansen ever wrestle any of these people?
These people?
Yeah.
All of them.
Oh, okay.
I think I told you. I did, but you know, there's a
if I didn't remember.
No, that's all right. There's a famous Japanese interview with Stan Hansen and Kenta Kobashi from when Kenta Kobashi retired in 2013, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, it's done through a translator.
This is sounding familiar.
And they're sitting down, and Stan Hansen, he says, you know, I really respect your career. You've had such a great career. You know, when I was wrestling you guys, I was really trying to hurt all you guys.
That's right.
Like, so you couldn't go past me. Saying it just in this very, very pleasant,
like a soft normal voice. Like normal tone.
Yeah. but yeah, there's.
Do you like the matches where he went against these guys?
Love. Yes, love them. The worst matches he had against any of them were against Misawa. Strangely.
Huh.
His matches against Kobashi and against Kawada are unreal.
Hmm.
Unreal. One of his Kawada matches is like my second favorite match of all time.
Huh.
So you see that rolling elbow.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, that was a real land on him.
Yeah. So you see they've started to escalate the moves a little bit more. Here we go. Like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And more like pin attempts.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell because, like, you don't really get to see a lot of the audience, but I don't see a whole lot of kids.
No.
Is that common, typical?
Yes.
I mean, it's also, like, the front rows, so, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's an older crowd.
Mm.
Like, a more professional crowd.
Hmm.
So you'll see a lot of salarymen in suits, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They may or may not be, gang affiliated, as they say.
Gang related.
I told you about the guy Mitch in Japan, right?
Yeah.
Good guy. Good guy.
So now the team has headlocked the other team.
Yeah. Misawa and Kobashi here. There's Kawada. Getting some more shots in on Ol Misawa here. Oh, dynamic T. There he is. Look at that. Oof.
Whoa.
So it's always a little uncomfortable, of course, to see Misawa take a big suplex, you know, landing right on his head like that, of course. You remember.
Yeah. Gnarly.
Yes.
I didn't see anyone land on their head,
you know,
or neck. Just
And that's a big aspect of of All Japan as they continued to progress in the 90s was the frequency and the increase of those kind of moves.
Yeah, right. Makes sense.
Yeah. But that's a big talking point about, like, the ultimate decline of the promotion. In the sense that the style is not sustainable.
Sure.
Because I don't know if you remember when I was kind of explaining to you how this style worked, is that it builds, each match builds on each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you continue to build and build and build and do more and more moves, and you can only go so far, you know?
Right. I mean, to circle back, it's like kind of like Loudness Wars.
You know?
You start to lose dynamic if you go, like, you know, so far.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, I mean, you have to... There's universal elements that work in pro wrestling or in music or in whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to stick with those, and, you know, like, there's things that are always going to be successful.
Yeah.
Like, style.
And important,
like, sure.
To making a story happen.
Yeah.
You gotta have dynamic, you know?
Yeah. And it's... current wrestling... And people complain about it constantly in every era, of course, just like anything else. But it's like you're losing dynamic all the time.
Right.
You know, things are getting louder and louder.
Exactly.
And so there's
a fear of losing the audience.
Yeah.
So you do the kind of lowest hanging fruit possible. You know?
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, I mean, and of course the thing is that it's not sustainable. you know?
Exactly.
Like,
especially something like this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not sustainable purely for the people, yeah, the people's, like, well-being, you know?
Totally.
Which, I mean, like, WWE currently, like, they all wrestle, like, so fast and do such crazy moves and everything. Yeah. And they wrestle 300 matches a year or something, you know? So it's like, someone's gonna die.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's coming. Someone's gonna die in the ring.
Especially if you throw in drugs and stuff into that.
Yeah, equation. Which really is like, it's like night and day. Because it's not like sketchy outlaws anymore. It's like computer nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like video game people.
Right.
Which is dumb. So Kobashi, he hit his moonsault, his big moonsault. Kawada kicked out. But, yeah, I mean, the thing, like, no match that's based on athletic ability and physical moves, no match like that ever stands the test of time.
Wouldn't seem like it.
Yeah. Because something is always better, you know? Exactly. Like, there has to be something more to it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that is constantly being lost since the 70s, sure, or the 60s even, you know, or the 20s.
Yeah, exactly. That's just natural.
Yeah.
So the crowd has sensed something, I feel like, because it's reaching more of like a fever pitch. Like, yeah, the moves are becoming more heightened and like intense.
Yeah.
And Misawa is kind of dragging around Dangerous K.
Mm-hmm. So now he's kind of like, you're seeing him, he's going through his moves now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see that he's finally been able to get a one-up on Kawada now.
Yeah, this is the first time in the match.
Yeah, that he's had, like, sustained, any kind of sustained.
Exactly. Yeah. But Tawe is breaking it up. So is that a choke slam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he always does those kind of weird ones where he just pushes kinda, like, you down. Yeah. And so, oh, here we go. Oh, boy.
Now they're all in the corner, like, trying to get each other.
Yeah. And so this is the first time, obviously, we've seen Kobashi and Tawe. Both of them are doing well now.
In life?
In life.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Neither wrestles anymore.
Yeah.
They're both, like, doing well. Kobashi, he makes a lot of appearances at wrestling-type things, and, like, he always looks really, like, happy and healthy and all that. It's very good. Oof. So another Dangerous K kick there to old Misawa. It's, like, very hard.
Yeah.
These are very hard kicks. Like,
noticing.
Yeah. The crowd's, like, losing it.
Yeah, the moves are all intensified.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool the way it goes up and sustains. It never goes back down after a certain point, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's, like, oddly important to me that, like, to know that these guys, like, do well in life afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, even as a non-fan.
Yeah.
I, like, hope.
Look at this. Look at this.
Dude.
Yeah.
So this Tawe guy's shady, dude.
Tawe just choke-slammed Misawa on the floor.
Yeah, from that outer
from
rim.
The apron.
The apron.
The apron to the floor. Oh. No, I absolutely agree. It, like, you need to know that everyone's okay.
Yeah, that's why I always ask you if any of them have passed on.
Yeah, no, that's like,
it's like, it means something to me.
Yeah, I mean, it means something to me, too.
Well, that makes sense, because this is your thing.
Yeah.
You know? But there's, I guess there's, like, an overarching, like, that's a transcendent thing, I think, is, like...
Like, the darkness?
Yeah, and, like...
Or, like, the fatalistic, like, nature of...
Exactly.
The wrestling business, yeah.
Exactly, and, like, the sacrifice anyone in a physical entertainment...
Ah, did you see that?
He rolled him across the ring?
No, Misawa was... Kawada rolled him in to pin him. Misawa was rolling out to avoid getting pinned, and Kawada was chasing him on the ground. Ah! Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that was a bit chaotic.
Yeah.
But yeah, just... I don't know. Watching these matches as we have been, it's like... The I don't know if it's the sacrifice they make, or there's just something about their willfully being this weird spectacle.
Yeah.
In a really physical way.
Yeah.
So it's like you kind of just hope that they're all right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, like, culturally, like, I think it's very well cemented in popular culture that pro wrestling is sketchy and seedy. And the people do not live good lives.
And like you said, like there's a fatalistic kind of cloud over the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh. So they're...
Dude, the demons.
Yeah. So they're rolling right now.
Yeah.
Tawe choke slams Kobashi. We got a power bomb from Kawada on Misawa there. I think a big part of that is, like, it's just ingrained in us from the culture, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
For years and years and years.
For sure.
Yeah. And there's things like, you know, the wrestler or
the
Chris Benoit thing that'll come up in the news. Like, whenever... I think for most people, the only time they ever hear about pro wrestling is in this, like...
Dark,
violent
That's a
context.
Really good point. That is a really good point. I think you're absolutely right.
Look at that. Dude, oh,
that's
so
cool.
So Kobashi,
dude, that's so cool.
So Kawada beating on, you know, kicking Misawa on the ground. Kobashi crawls over to save,
I haven't seen that before.
No,
I haven't seen that before. That's pretty inventive.
Look at this. He's trying to, like, get to him to check on him and cover him.
Dude, that's so cool.
Ugh. And so he just got, Kobashi just got chokeslammed and suplexed simultaneously.
But it, like, afforded Misawa an opportunity to be calm.
Yeah. So he's taking out Tawe now with an elbow. A big kick from Kawada. Misawa's down again. Big two count. A lot of near falls now.
Yeah, everyone's on the ground.
Yeah. So now it's like, so Kawada's hitting moves. Hitting move, pinfall attempt, hit a move, pinfall attempt.
Yep.
Oof. And so the other two are kind of fighting back and forth in the corner a little bit. They're kind of neutralizing each other.
So he got him.
He got him.
And he hadn't done that before.
No. That's it. Kawada pins Misawa.
Yeah, crazy.
42 minutes and 37 seconds. So he pinned him, and now they become the they win the tag championship belts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say, I don't know that I saw that one coming as much, because they were kind of like, quote-unquote, winning the whole time.
Yeah.
And it usually seems like then the other guy gets overcomes it, right. And it gets you, you know? And
yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
So we'll turn this down. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, whatever. Sorry. So we'll turn that down while the post-match is happening there.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey there, AEW superstar Wardlow here with just a quick announcement about everything that we have going on over at the Place to Be Nation and all the great content that you can find across our two wonderful podcast feeds. On the PTBN wrestling feed, we have plenty of great content, including the Place to Be Nation podcast, the mothership of PTBN, where co-hosts JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo take you chronologically through the history of WWE. PTBN Main Event with hosts Scott Criscolo, Nate Melton, and Steve Willey breaking down all of the current events in the world of wrestling. The Wrestling War Zone, a podcast retrospective reliving the iconic Monday Night Wars, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell. Row 1, Seat 1, an interesting look inside the world of small town wrestling and beyond, with host Ben Zanny welcoming a variety of guests each week. Talkin' WCW heads to Center Stage Theater, where Tim Capel, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith pay tribute to the legendary promotion from the Dirty South. The Extreme Three-Way Dance takes you back on a trek through the land of extreme, with JT Rosero, John D'Amato, and Jennifer Smith. Body Press Your Luck, a brand new wrestling game show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan. With This Ring, in which a husband and wife combo, Ryan and Cindy Everett discuss their specific matches and their respective fandoms. You Don't Know Billy Jack, where Drew Wardlaw and his friend Jordan watch and discuss some of the greatest pro wrestling matches of all time through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan in search of a universal connection in pro wrestling storytelling. Now, how's that for a long-winded show description? Anyways, plus we have monthly pay-per-view reaction shows and semi-regular shows like Jenny and the Gems, No Holds Barred, PTB NXT, Adam's Division, Special Relations, and Jeff Learns Wrestling. Also, be sure to check out PTBN Pop Feed, littered with great content, offering tremendous shows like The Hard Traveling Fanboys, The Year in Pop, Laugh In Theater, DC For You, Marvel Age, The Brother and Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. So subscribe today. And hey, while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, MCU Journey MCU Journey the Infinity, and more. Also, on our social media pages, the greatest sitcom of all time tournament is now underway. We are in round one still. There will be four matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter so you don't miss a single one. And we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do research, promote your matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GCWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, pop culture, and beyond, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing shopping online over at Amazon.com, please be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PTBN Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with absolutely no cost to you. Hey, can't beat that. Whew. Now that's all. Thank you for listening, and back to the show.
all right. We'll get right to this. Okay, so while I'm thinking about it,
rank the guys.
On not necessarily in this match. Rank them who you think is like the best overall.
I mean, I would say Misawa is the best.
Okay.
And then Kawada, okay, is right behind him.
Uh-huh.
And now I think Tawe has way more character,
mm-hmm,
and is, like, sketchy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he seems to lack tact.
Yeah.
But, like, I'd put him number three and then Kobashi number four.
Interesting.
Because I feel like he was... I'd identify him anywhere. The other guy seemed like more of a stock wrestler.
Yeah, okay.
And... You know, he kind of was... He was a little cheesier to me.
Very interesting.
Kobashi, but...
Yeah,
very This is just on a, you know...
No, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So that's really interesting. So, Tawe is almost universally looked at as the fourth member, the lowest member, and like, a decent amount... He's looked at a decent amount less than the others.
I figured that.
Sure.
Yeah, like he just doesn't have any tact.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like you could even I could like kind of tell.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's got a lot of character.
Yeah.
So to me, that means something.
Yeah. No, he's. I mean, favorite wise, he is my favorite.
You like him a lot.
Yeah. I would actually have them ordered. Just the way you do, if I'm thinking about the actual best, who I think the best, uh-huh, are. Yeah.
Huh. I did okay.
Yeah. Generally, people, it's back and forth, either Misawa or Kobashi number one.
Huh.
Number one or number two, and then, like, Kawada third, Tawe fourth.
So what's so great about Kobashi?
Well, honestly, what's so great about him is he... wrestles like an American wrestler.
That's exactly like what I was thinking.
Yeah, and that's what you said.
Yeah,
I mean, that's you said funny. As much in so many words. Like that, he's much easier to connect with for people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's very really, expressive. Yeah,
totally. No, he's great.
He has really big movements. Mm-hmm. You know, like so. I think it's purely an issue of he's the easiest one to. Like, you know, my whole thing about, like, what people watch in wrestling is they only, or anything, really. They only, like, at the end of the day, most people only understand and like what they're familiar with. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's the most relatable.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, when you watch him in this match, I mean, he brings you back into, like, that this is a wrestling match.
Yeah, yeah.
And so whether you like that or you don't, I don't know. I personally like a little bit, like we've talked about a lot in the show, I mean, the more surrealistic characters.
Yeah.
And that would be more like Tawei for me.
Right,
his
yeah.
physical appearance is bizarre. And yeah. And, like, it's easier to picture him, like, in a bar fight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
than,
yeah.
like, than yeah. wrestling.
Yeah. And he's out of shape.
Yeah, and it's like,
and he has, like, skinny arms.
Right, but it's like, he's way more of, like, a crap kicker. Like, Kobashi's, like, ripped.
Yeah.
He's, like, really buff.
Yeah.
But, like, I couldn't picture him, like, in a street fight.
Right.
Like, he's kind of, like, he's kind of hamming it up there.
Yeah,
the other guy's walking around, and he's just, like, yeah, yeah. slamming people down. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, so let's get to our questions here. Okay, number one, general thoughts on the match.
That was a good match. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting, and it did what they probably wanted it to do, which is it started with some intensity, but it was like a pot of water, like, you know, from simmer to boil. Like,
yeah.
You know, you kind of could feel it in the beginning, and I wasn't sure which way it was going to go, but then it did start to get, like, pretty intense.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny how, like, the bad guys, I mean, I viewed them as the bad guys, the guys who won.
Yeah.
Because they broke all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm not super astute, so I don't know if they did, but I didn't see Kawada's team ever go into the ring when they shouldn't have. Whereas
you mean Misawa's team?
No, I mean, yeah, yeah, sorry, Misawa, yeah. Yeah, Misawa's team. Whereas the Demons, they were with impunity.
They were going,
like, yeah. recklessly, blatantly, flagrantly, and just hitting the guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which, in all these other matches, I mean, I don't think I've seen anything like that in the other, like, multiple people matches.
Yeah.
Just quite like that. Usually they'll sneak one in every now and again. But it was like, every time,
yeah.
the other guy would just come in and just hit the guy
yeah.
and go out or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, to be kind of rewarded with the win, I just thought that was, I didn't expect that. Because I thought it was building up to be that classic
yeah.
turnaround.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was a good match. I liked it.
Yeah. So you answered the second question, of course. Did you like it? Why or why not? Number three, you actually kind of answered as well. What was the story the wrestlers were trying to convey?
Yeah. I mean, I think I could like understand pretty early on that it was like a grudge match.
Yes.
And they all sold it. Like, they all
yeah.
did a pretty good job. I liked the expression. Like,
yeah.
it didn't feel that expressive the last couple Japanese matches we watched. Male Japanese matches we watched.
You know yeah, what I mean? Absolutely
like,
not.
Like, really, you know, like, getting
yeah.
the crowd to feel the vibe like that.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they gave me a bit more of the story.
Yeah.
And, again, it was kind of cool because they didn't follow the typical the archetype of that kind of story, which
right.
would be, like, defeating the people who are breaking the rules.
Yeah, they kind of overcome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number four, can you see why this is considered one of the greatest matches of all time?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The last, there were several, like, if I can ever tell that there are several unique things happening, I feel like then it
yeah.
probably it would be on some list. Because
yeah.
if it's obvious enough to me, then those of you who watch wrestling and care about it would really appreciate the kind of nuances. But, like, I love the guy covering the other guy's
yeah.
body. I mean, that's
great.
That's pretty cool
that's,
and classic.
Yeah.
And, And then the I didn't immediately get it, but especially you pointing it out, but even just seeing it raw, the rolling across the ring.
Across like the entire ring.
There's just stuff like that that, you know, we haven't seen yet
in this
thing.
Yeah.
There's enough of that mixed with the professionalism of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But there was enough kind of off-kilter about it. I think Tawei is kind of like, brings some of that levity.
Yeah.
Because his lack of, like, tact.
Yeah.
Because the other guys are pretty dialed in.
Yeah.
And so you kind of almost need that to make this, to bring this into that next level.
Well, because that's what you talk about all the time, is, like, you need that element.
Yeah.
Like, to remind you. Okay, so like, and we've talked about it on episodes before, but just to kind of reiterate, because I think it's a really interesting, point. It is a match like Jumbo Tsuruta versus Tenryu. That was the first All Japan match we watched. I don't even know how much of that you remember.
Yeah.
Very stoic. Both guys were very stoic.
Okay, yeah.
Very straightforward.
Yeah.
No nonsense, no theatrics, nothing. And that's a match that you didn't like very much.
Yeah.
Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, because what you were seeing was a pro wrestling match with no gimmicks, nothing absurd or surreal about it. So you were seeing a simulated fight, a purely simulated fight, which is ultimately very easy to tell that it's simulated, and thus less interesting.
Yeah, and especially someone who's not prone or attracted to like watching fighting.
You know,
like I don't like boxing or UFC. Like,
sure, yeah.
That's not interesting to me.
Yeah,
but yeah, exactly. That's right.
So what you've said before is you need an element. So like a baby doll on the outside of the cage, or
the phone
and the War Games match that I still haven't recovered. I may actually try to. I don't know. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk.
Yeah.
But, like the phone and the War Games match, or let's see. I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, even like the Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat match, that didn't really have that. That element to it. That was a pretty straightforward match, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I guess Tawei is that
he's
that
kind of
figure,
the,
right?
The point of entry, I think.
Yeah,
but I mean, and what was excuse me? What was funny is like he didn't even. It's not that he. There's a couple things that need to happen. I need to know. I don't know how to explain it, but. It's nice when I can know that it's wrestling, which I think Kobashi was the like point of entry.
That's
for
your
that.
Classic wrestler.
Yeah, so like he's more of a tell, even though the other guy's much more clumsy and like art. He's like an kind of an artless figure, but like I think because of that, he's that other dynamic, important like part of what I apparently am attracted to.
Yeah.
And is another angle into the world. And it's
right.
Like, it allows you to, like, use your imagination more and kind of...
Yeah.
Takes you to a different place than, like, a surface-level physical match.
Is it a suspension of disbelief or not?
It's
different than that, isn't it?
It's different than that. I mean, it can be. It's like... Yeah, it's like just an important storytelling device, like something that I don't know how to explain it. It's like a cipher. It's like a code that allows you to translate like why this is important to people, or like why this is interesting.
Yeah.
Because if you watch this and that's what you love and you like it, you don't need that. Like that's part of it, I think. I do think it's integral to like to wrestling. That's apparent. If these really are the great matches, I mean, that's been like an apparent string through 90% of them. But like, for those of us that don't, I think having that element, it's a little bit of like a Rosetta Stone.
Like it allows you, Because I'm trying to, because I know what you mean, but I can't articulate it either. Yeah. Like, I can't, I can point it out, like, and I can say, okay, I bet that's the element.
Yeah.
I can point that out, but I can't articulate it for you, and, like, I can't fully understand it. So it allows you, it takes you out of professional wrestling as a one-on-one or two-on-two, whatever it is, simulated fight, which is relatively uninteresting to someone like you.
Right.
And probably to the larger public. Sure. Who's not a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would someone watch two people pretend to fight with nothing else going on?
And I mean, that's the classic criticism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, fake, dude.
It's just like these grown men, like fake, like, fighting.
Yeah.
Because they're not, I don't think they're, I mean, I'm sure I've said that. I mean, it's because you're not attuned to, like, that element.
Yeah. And
I
don't know how, like the intricacies of, the, like, the way they tell the story and the
exactly,
moves.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So what, something like Tallway or a chair being thrown into the cage, or Baby Doll on the outside, or Sangre Chicana's mask or something.
Yeah, yeah.
What that represents is what that changes is it shifts it from a simulated fight to like a bizarre spectacle.
Yeah,
and that you're watching, right?
Yeah, and it can kind of become like a, it can kind of like become like a Twilight Zone.
Yeah,
you know, like a, okay, I'm not really certain what's real here now, and you know when the guys, when the guy's doing these throws that are really like clumsy, it's like, did the other guy really get hurt? Maybe, and it introduces. It unlocks a few things, and it introduces an element that you can't pinpoint.
Yeah.
And I what's kind of interesting to me as an outsider is I don't know how much, like, you guys are all aware of that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Like, as viewers, but even, like, the people doing this.
Right, yeah.
You know, because if you step back and think of, like, grown men, like, this is theater. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's grown, but it's, like, really ignorant, like.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, it's not like... Like, I like theater. I'm not,
yeah.
I wasn't using that as, like, a disparaging remark. I think that's a high art form.
Yeah.
So, like, they're taking a high art form, but it's, like, in the context of, like, a physical sport, like, a physical activity.
Yeah, which lowers it considerably.
Which, like, you don't associate with art. You know, you can look at, like, LeBron James and, like, see him, like, moving a basketball, and there's art to that, but, like, you don't associate artistry.
Yeah, that's not like an artistic statement or anything.
Yeah, but so it's this weird crossing of those two things.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of subconscious elements there that, like, these guys might not even be aware of the signals that they're sending.
Yeah, well, you know? And I don't think wrestling fans are aware of those signals, because, I mean, I've never heard anyone, I've certainly never thought that, and I've never heard anyone bring that up, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So like, what I'm having trouble with, your standpoint, or, like, that with what that point is where, is how adding an absurd element makes it more believable to you. Or, like, how that blurs the lines.
Yeah, I think it's because, like, whenever there's something like confusion or mischief, then you don't know. You can't like any element of distortion, you can't control. Even if it's like they planned that, if it's like planned mischief or whatever, they still can't really control that.
Okay.
So when it's for instance, when they cut themselves, they that's planned and it's not spontaneous, but they can't control how much they're bleeding.
Right. And we've talked about, I talked about, like, examples where guys cut themselves too deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so that's, like, one example. Or, like, that guy, Tawai, like, he can't control, like, how his body is. And apparently, like, his style, like, it just lends itself to, like, you just, there's a kind of, it brings an element of chaos that, like, I think takes it off script in a way that, like, because I know that they go off script in the like, wrestling of it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But whenever there's that element, I mean, I feel like that takes it into a realm where, okay, now I really am unsure of what's going on. And
because he doesn't perform, or he doesn't look the way you expect him to, or and he doesn't perform in the way you expect him to.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it can be subtle or not. Like, with the cutting yourself, that's really not subtle. It's like, that's like a thing. I mean, you could cut yourself and really bleed out or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you could body slam someone, you know, wrong, and they could be paralyzed.
Yeah.
You just, to everything, there's a degree of, like, uncertainty. So the more, like, absurd it is, the more uncertain I feel.
Okay.
And, like, that makes it more interesting.
And that's what you, so you like the feeling of not knowing exactly how much is real or planned.
Yeah, and it's, I think it is theater in that way, because it's like, you don't know, besides the theatrical story they're telling, you still don't know, like, you don't know where that story is going to end. You don't know so you don't know the story they're telling where that's going to end. That's one level, but, like, the story of that absurd element, you don't know how that's going to end.
Right.
So when they introduce the phone, like, I don't know, like, where that story is going to end.
Yeah.
What does the phone mean?
Yeah.
Why is it there? Like, who's going to do something with it? What are they going to do with it?
Okay. Yeah.
So, like, it creates a subplot that thickens the entire like, spectacle.
And, like I said,
the more absurd it is, the more believable it becomes in a weird way because of that. It, like, it draws you in, and it tricks
you. Because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and you're tricked into believing it, you know, because of its absurdity.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I think that's important. That's apparently important to me.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting.
If any of that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how valid any of that is.
No.
It's just kind of what I'm getting.
So here's a question that I would have is, if you had seen, you know, 5 years worth of Akira Tawai matches, or if you had seen Paulie dangerously tossing the phone to Arn Anderson week after week on TV, does that dumb it down for you? To the point where you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it would be, like, less immediate, but I think the idea would be this. I would argue, like, that whether anyone knows it or not, everyone who's a fan of this has felt how I'm feeling.
Of course.
I'm not, like, trying to be, like, I'm just articulating what everyone's thinking. But
No.
I feel like as an outsider, I have that.
No, that's like a hook. That's one of the hooks.
Yeah.
It's when you're 5 years old, or it's when you're 25,
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, like, I know that, well, I mean, if you're really little, it's like, oh, this is real.
And that's bizarre on a whole different level.
Yeah, like, Or it's like, I know it's fake, but he's bleeding, like,
and
not understanding the concept of someone intentionally cutting themselves.
Right.
Or you're 30 years old, and you go on the internet all the time, and you know all the terms and the backstage gossip.
Right.
But, you know, something a little fishy happens, and you don't know what you're seeing.
Yeah, so that's the part that I believe is, and that's the purpose of this show, is to explore these in-between parts.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, the idea and hope would be, in that time, I've accrued knowledge. I think that the effect of the that element would diminish.
Yeah.
But my ascertainment of like what's happening would increase.
Yeah.
So that it would even out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now I must like watch with my eyes and take in, allow my subconscious to like interpret what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't have the benefit of seeing that guy come out every week and like do his thing every time and, you know, understand the nuances. And then, like you said, this is this guy's move. And when this guy does that, look for this, cause that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I can only like see these crude elements.
Yeah.
But I would think like they would lose value the more I would watch. But there's a gain there. So I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right.
You gain the internal knowledge of, the inner workings of like how it all happens and, you know, the stuff I just pointed out. You like the nuances of that. It's the exact same thing. It's like watching baseball and you love seeing the home run or the guy just strike out 10 people in a row. You know, that's incredible, and everyone likes that. From the child to the 90-year-old man, like, everyone likes those things. But when, the more you watch it, the impact of those is less, but your increase of the knowledge of how the inner workings...
And the understanding,
It really enriches the experience. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a trade-off there.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I'd equate it to.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. Like, so... An example of that in terms of like diminishing returns. So WCW, we watched a couple WCW matches, and there's the NWO, who you've heard that name before, and we talked about them at some point, but so they were like an invader group to WCW, and for a long time on the Monday night show, essentially every main event, it would be, you know, two guys wrestling, probably one of them in the NWO, and every single week, they would run it. The NWO would run in and beat someone up. Every week.
Yeah.
For like 3 years straight.
So crazy, yeah.
So obviously there's diminishing returns there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The first several, it's like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it eventually, you know, you have to... It eventually, you know, really hurt the company.
Yeah, you have to get more creative, I think. I mean, it depends on what you want out of your promotion, I guess.
Yeah, right, yeah.
If you're a McMahon or whatever, it's like, you don't care.
I mean, you don't care.
You want money and, like, fans and stuff.
Yeah.
But I do think, from watching all these, that... is an important element.
That's really interesting. So to kind of get back to it here, so I mean, like I said, this is like a standard answer, best match of all time. I do think this is, I've gone back and forth on these two a good amount. I think this is a clear better match than 6-3-94.
It feels like it to me.
Yeah. I mean... I don't think it quite has that same level of gravity during the opening sequence.
I agree.
Which is like, that feeling is undeniable, and it's so great, and you don't quite have it with this match.
Yeah, I agree.
But the work and the wrestling and each person, how great they are in their role...
Mm-hmm.
Kobashi is the baby face, because he's the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
So the young baby face getting his leg injured and trying to help out his partner who's getting beat up. You know what I mean? Desperately trying to save him. And, you know, Misawa using that elbow as his equalizer.
Right.
But, like, being overwhelmed by Kawada.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like, he wants it bad, you know?
Yeah,
it's been 5 years or whatever of him, you know, not pinning Misawa. And, like, he's got another chance now.
Right.
And then, you know, Taue just creating chaos and everything. It's like, I don't know. It's great. It's very, very great. Pretty undeniable. So let's do our rankings here.
Okay.
So... You've got Magnum Tully, number one. Flair Steamboat, number two. Bach Hennig, number three. Dream Slam 1, which was the singles match, the ladies singles match, number 4, the ladies tag, number 5, 6-3-94, number 6, number 7 would be Tenryu versus Jumbo, number 8 is War Games. We're still going to keep it in.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can
recover
that episode. So that's number 8. Number 9, Sangre Chicana versus MS1. Number 10, Macho Man versus Steamboat. Where does this fit in?
This has got to be number 2.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I put that. I think that's right up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... doesn't have... I mean, there's more relatable elements for me, I think, to Magnum Tully.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a hard one to top.
Yeah.
But... This is like as a wrestling match, like what more could you really want?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, number. So here's my issue. Flair Steamboat, like that has such a strong attachment with me. Like, yeah. It's like, so okay, so I don't know if you knew this or not, but, like, the way I watched wrestling growing up, because I was aware of WWF from
sure,
you know, like, everyone's aware of it. Yeah.
But you went to your grandparents' house? Or?
Yeah, my great-grandma's house.
Your great-grandma's
in Mississippi.
House. That's right.
Rural Mississippi. Dude. And that's where I watched wrestling for the first time. But, so, like, that was the promotion that I watched, and my mindset was that, this is the promotion I watch. I can't watch the other one.
Hmm.
As, like, a loyalty thing. Yeah, you know, like a sports team, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
And so, I didn't, and I saw it, like, at my cousin's house or whatever, you know, WWF. Yeah. But then, like, so... the Monday Night Wars. Do you know what that is?
I don't think so.
So that's in the mid-90s, WCW, they started going head-to-head on TV, Monday Night TV, with WWF, and they had this ratings war for a few years. And so it was like, oh yeah, like, what are you on WCW side or WWF side? So cool. It's like, I have this loyalty... And I didn't watch much WWF.
Yeah.
So, like, I have this loyalty, you know? And that's when I stopped watching wrestling because WCW went out of business.
Yeah.
And was bought by the WWF.
Right.
And so my thought was, oh, okay. Like, that's it. Like, I can't watch wrestling anymore.
Yeah,
like,
that's so interesting.
Which is stupid, of course.
No, I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, but it's like... I don't know. I was like 16 or 17 by that time. You'd think like I'd have some level of awareness about that, but you know, I think another part of it was too though was WWF was way, it was a lot more sexual, you know.
It got so, really weird.
Yeah, pretty raunchy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like my parents wouldn't let me watch WWF.
Yeah, yeah. You also probably were generating new interests by that time too.
Yeah. Life. Yeah. Yeah. Like. Girls didn't like me in high school anyway, so that was never a concern. But I was like, you know, like I was deep into punk at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
and like riding bikes and all that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, regardless, it was like I watched till the end. You know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Okay,
wrestling has ended.
I did it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting.
But anyway, so like. Flair Steamboat, like that really gets me, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think this has to be number two, for now.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable match,
and you were kind of re-surprised by it.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a few years.
Yeah.
Since I watched this, and like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, number two for me, and I. if, because that's as straight a wrestling match, a tag team match as you'll see, pretty much. Yeah. You know what I mean? No fanfare, theatrics, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And if it hits you at that level, you,
yeah,
like it's got to mean something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
It's like I said, I mean, really, what more could you want?
Yeah.
You know, if you're watching professional wrestling.
Yeah, no, no, it's got everything. All right, so this has been a long one, but a good one. Any plugs for you?
No, just I want to plug the barbecue going on outside.
Going on at the Chop Shop next door. Yeah.
Just like shout out to them.
Shout out. Okay.
You know, respect.
Yeah. Okay. So no other plugs or anything. How? Let me ask you this: how much money do you make every year?
I don't like these weird, bizarre personal questions that I know you're coming up with at work, and it's really twisted.
I've got a list, a big list of them.
You probably do.
Yeah.
Anyway. $0
Huh, okay. Can't support a family on $0. Okay. Oh, well, you can follow me on Twitter @_burningspirits. As we're recording this, I will be on an upcoming episode of All Holes Filled.
You're a liar.
I'm not a liar, no. It's a podcast. I will be doing a segment on there. It's a podcast where the hosts, they listen to records that they should have listened to at some point but haven't yet. And so they listen to them and they discuss them. So I'm doing that. The one I chose is Set It Off by Madball.
Dude, so sick.
You know, I've heard them now, but I hadn't heard them until
very
recently.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. But anyways, I mean,
I'm not even that familiar with them. They're just conceptually just...
Yeah. So by the time, as we're recording this, it will probably be 1 year before this sees the light of day. But nevertheless, find me on All Holes Filled. And that's all. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Three Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceThreeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Three Nations Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceThreeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceThreeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceThreeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.